Guten Abend op Radio Ära, de lauscht dat April Edition vun Iwergott an d'Welt als zweeten Dënschten am Mountdatter vun 6:30 bis Erdauer. Momentan ha ich am der Taschenjäger noch ein Mikro just relaxed. Mir hat den neues nicht gesehen, der Bob anders diesen Mond. Der Bob hat aber Sachen vorbereitet, die auch noch werden gleich gespielt gehen. Und ich werde ganz sicher der Bob haut mehr hören wie mich. Nach just kurz habe ich als Frequenzen durchgehen, das aus dem Radio Arasing Hauptfrequenzen 102,9. Mehr im Norden geht es nach den 105,2 und für die Minute echt oder 87,8. Und noch im Internet von der Eis auf www.radioara.org hat geändert hinter kurzem. Und gehen zwei Dele an Schmengen den ersten Teil, sieht Bob selber gleich eine Erklärung, um was es da geht.
En vue von den Europawahlen, die am Juni stattfanden, hat den European Policy Forum for Humanist International eine Reihe Propositionen ausgeschafft, die Politiker aus ganz Europa in Abrit gehen, für sie zu invitieren, sich denen Positionen, denen Valoren, denen humanistischen Valoren zu rallieren. Das ganze Projekt ist koordiniert gegen vom Tania Giacomuzzi Motta, der European Advocacy Officer for Humanist International, sondern zu Brüssel, der beim Europaparlament, bei der Europäischen Kommission und beim Europarat für Humanist International koordiniert. Weil an den Oven tun wir die große Freude, hier mit Tanja drüber zu schwätzen, was sein Erbisch da ist, aber auch speziell den Dossier Humanist Pledge zu thematisieren, wie es dazu kommt, was Forderungen sind, was die Bitte ist von diesen Forderungen. Weil Tanja aber kein Letzteres schwätzt, wissen wir dann für den Interview mit Tanja auf Englisch.
So, good evening, Tanja. Maybe you can introduce yourself shortly, what you do, who you are.
Yes, hello, Bob. And first of all, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here. I'd like to introduce myself then. My name is Tania Giacomuzzi Motta, and I'm the European Advocacy Officer at Humanists International. Should I give some context?
Yeah, so Humanist International is the umbrella organization where AHA Luxembourg is a member. So, and we recently, partially because the European Humanist Federation, got closed. we now have you as the European Humanist Policy Officer. Good, but the opportunity why I wanted to have you on our show was that you have been working on this humanist pledge in the framework of the European Parliament elections. Maybe you can tell us a bit why you had this idea and about the process, how we constructed that together as a community.
Of course. So just to give some more context about Humanists International, as you said, we are a global umbrella organization and we represent the humanist movement. And we also have over 100 member and associate organizations that we represent in several international organizations. One of them is the United Nations. There's also the Council of Europe and the European Union that you just mentioned. So your question was about the Humanist Pledge for the European elections. So I will start talking about that. Mm-hmm. So in sum, as a pro-European civil society organizations, the organization that has core values such as humanism, human rights, and democracy, we think it's very important that we have a role in contributing to the awareness raising around the European elections, and to also contribute to informed decision-making when voting. So together with some of our European member organizations, we have drafted this document that we call the Humanist Pledge for the European elections. Maybe I should explain what the pledge is in this context.
Why a pledge?
Exactly. So in this context, the pledge is really a commitment that is to be made by candidates that are running for election to the European Parliament to support a particular set of policy positions or values, in our case, humanist values. And the text that we have drafted lists several commitments to be made by candidate members of the European Parliament, or as we call them for short, MEPs, to support fundamental humanist values and focus on pertinent societal issues.
Yeah, and how did we come up with these five commitments, basically?
So by consulting with the member organizations that are part of this project, we discussed which would be the priority issues that we would like to raise with candidate members of the European Parliament. And we came up with the following. We basically have five commitments. And putting it very simply, the first one relates to the importance of defending human rights, democracy, and the rule of law, which are essential values for our members. Then secondly, another very important value for our members is secularism. So we ask candidate members of the European Parliament to commit to upholding secularism, and other commitments are asking them to safeguard the freedom of choice, for example, and to ensure that civil society organizations are included in decision-making processes. And we also speak about the importance of taking socially just action on the climate crisis, which is also a deeply connected issue to the humanist movement. We see it that way.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that these five core issues are currently under threat? Are there trends in policy making or in society in Europe in general that these five things that we value as humanists are under threat, or is it more reminding candidates that these are the maybe core values of Europe?
So as you know, and as we've seen in Europe, there is a recent trend of the rise of the far right. And unfortunately, this is also expected to influence the results of the European Parliament elections. So as a civil society organization, we really want to take part in promoting opposite values to the ones that the far right is trying to push on citizens. And we want to remind people of humanist values that are pillars, actually, of European democracy. And the goal really is to counter this far-right trend, to help people making informed decision-making, because the goal of the pledge is to create a record, a public record of candidate MEPs that have humanist principles, so that when citizens are making a decision on who to vote for, they know exactly which values the candidates and their political parties defend. So this is really a pledge for democracy. It's a pledge for progressive and humanist values, which we are trying to defend from this far-right politics.
Now that your picture's in the paper being perfectly admired, you can have anyone that you have ever desired. All you gotta tell me now is why, 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 why. Welcome to the working week. Oh, I know it don't thrill you, I hope it don't kill you. Welcome to the working week. You gotta do it till you do it, so you better get to it. All of your family has to kill to survive, and this the waiting for their big day to arrive. But if they do how I feel, they better be alive. Welcome to the working week. Oh, I know.
I see that a lot of other NGOs that are not necessarily coming from our part of the spectrum, I would say, would also say that we need actions in response to the threat of climate change. So we probably have allies here. But what stood out for me is that in our humanist pledge for the European Parliament elections, we focus or we stress the guided by scientific evidence. Is that something that you think is not the case for other NGOs, or is it just that we wanted to re-stress our principles of scientific evidence?
So I would say that other NGOs would also think this is important, but this is a core humanist principle that's very important to our members. So we really wanted to stress it, again, in opposition to a far-right ideology where scientific evidence is just not taken into consideration. But of course, we have many allies in other civil society organizations that agree with us and have the same position. We just wanted to state this as a humanist value.
Mm-hmm. So if I read it right, there is rule of law, so upholding rights that are democratically voted, then also critical thinking, evidence-based reasoning, free media, scientific evidence. So there's a number of core values that you find back here. We also translated this into different languages, I see.
Exactly, Bob. The goal was to make the pledge a really European text and to be able to reach the biggest amount of citizens possible. So the pledge is available on our Humanists International website in 11 different European languages.
Great. So citizens are supposed to use this tool, or can use this tool, let's say it like that. So we're not imposing that, but we are providing this as a tool to help them in deciding whom to vote for. How will we promote this pledge to citizens? Because I think it's one thing to promote it to candidates and to ask them to publicly engage in upholding these values. But the other thing is, will citizens know about it? And maybe second attached question, do you think a lot of citizens will care about these values?
So it's very relevant what you're saying. So as you know, as a member of the policy forum that's in charge of this pledge project, there's two different steps of the project. So the first one is indeed that Humanists International, together with the member organizations, reaches the candidate MEPs and asks them whether they agree with these values and would like to sign the pledge. And the second part of the project, and in my view, the most important one, is to reach citizens in the member states. We will do this by publicizing this public list of candidate members. And you have said, will people care? I think a lot of people that are interested in politics and are actually experts in politics will tell you that politics are always local, right? That's why we think it's so important that we engage with civil society organizations in the member states. So that's why the role of organizations such as AHA is so important, because you can reach your members, you can reach more citizens in Luxembourg, because you understand the specific context and you will be able to communicate on the pledge and on the importance of the pledge, taking all of these into account. I believe that citizens nowadays are looking for institutions that they can trust. The trust in institutions is low. And we want to be able to counter this, and we want to be able to make citizens see the importance of democratic processes by showing them that what's at the root of them, the base of democratic processes, are values. And when we vote for politicians, we should vote definitely based on our values. What we should look for in their policies are the values that they are basing them upon. So that's why we decided to keep these commitments in the pledge to simple and clear goals that we think citizens in all the member states will be able to relate to, and that they will be interested in knowing from which political parties and which candidates actually support them. And then, as I was saying, in our website, this list will be there, and the manifesto of the parties will also be linked to the name of the candidates. And in this way, we're hoping that citizens can then look for even more information on the different parties and make an informed decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's all about informed decisions, so that you really know as a citizen what these politicians, but also their parties, stand for, so that you can vote in good conscience.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wanted to also discuss with you, or have a conversation rather with you, about your work more in general as a humanist representative in let's say in Brussels. And if I say Brussels under inverted commas, it's at the European Union institutions. Why is it really important that we as humanists, as secularists, have a voice, even if it's a small voice? in Brussels.
Yeah, so thank you for that question. So as I said at the beginning, we represent humanist interests at different international organizations, and we as humanists really value multilateralism, I believe. And in Brussels is, as you said, it's the center of the European Union. It's where the free institutions are based, so the Parliament, the Commission, and the Council. And in Brussels, there are thousands of actors trying to influence these institutions. There's from trade associations to lobby groups to civil society organizations. All of these actors are trying to influence the institutions, having their own interests in mind. And as humanists, we really have an important role in defending secularism, like you said. And we are very active in Brussels in the framework of this Article 17 dialogues.
Well, what is that? I know, but maybe you can explain for our listeners.
Exactly. So Article 17 dialogues are not really well known for the wider public, but the Article 17 is an article of the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union. And it basically introduced the legal obligation for European Union institutions to have regular dialogue with religious and non-confessional organizations. So obviously we are part of the non-confessional organizations. And as you said, we have a we have a voice there. But these religious organizations are often very well funded, and therefore they have more resources. And with this, I mean also more human resources to be able to make their voices heard at the highest levels in EU policymaking. In this framework, we are one of the few organizations that represents non-religious people. So our voice is really essential there, because otherwise this dialogue would be completely hijacked by religious actors. And as we know, in our societies, we have a lot of people that have a non-religious worldview. So we are there to have a voice on secularism, on humanism, and to just represent non-religious people in the union. And we also stand as an opposition to the more extremist religious forces that are present here in this dialogue, not only, also in the overall lobby sphere in Brussels. So we stand as an opposition to religious dogma, and we represent the interests of our members here. And I think that's extremely important, taking into account the relevance and the power that mm-hmm. these religious institutions have mm-hmm. In the policy shaping world in Brussels.
So can we maybe talk about a few concrete examples of policy influences that we can expect or have happened and are happening that go against humanist values? I think abortion or the right for abortion is one of these, no?
Of course. This is a classic case from religious organizations trying to undermine women's rights. So in Brussels, there's a big representation from religious organizations that funds a lot of, sometimes it seems like soft power events, where they discussed in a very unclear way women's rights. But what they always mean, and what they are always trying to influence, and the perspective that they're trying to push on others, is that women do not have the right to choose. Women should focus on family. And they just really try to counter progressive ideologies. And by doing this, they reach out to more conservative members of the European Parliament, who then they try to influence their votes in different committees. And they just try to influence as well their rhetorics. You can see the rhetorics of very conservative MEPs as being all the same. And this rhetoric is basically, it's fed by these organizations to these politicians.
So probably as other lobby groups, so there is this, religious or spiritual lobby group that as I understand it, has a lot of influence, but also behind the doors, no? So it's not always obvious for citizens around Europe to see this influence.
It's definitely not obvious, but fortunately it has been studied by some of our civil society partners, such as the European Parliamentary Forum for Sexual and Reproductive Rights, that has published very interesting reports on the influence of these extremist religious actors in EU policy, especially concerning women's rights, because these in Brussels, women's and LGBTI rights, these are the issues that they focus on the most.
And I guess the right to die in dignity is also another issue.
I would say this is an issue that I am hoping will be at the center of the policy discourse for the next mandate, but it was not yet a big policy topic in Brussels just yet. But I'm sure that as soon as it becomes, they will be lobbying very, very strongly on one as well.
Und du, Madame Tanja Giacomuzzi-Motta, merci für die wertvollen Erklärungen zu Sänger Erbisch zu Bresse.
I go out to work on Monday morning, Tuesday I go off to honeymoon.
An du mat das nächsten Deel hei vun der Sendung Iwer Gott an d'Welt op Radio RR fertig. Merci Jene Bob fir den Interview hei an den zweiten Deel das lo eng Online-Pressekonferenz, die dann für Humanist International Guinness für rund zwei Wochen ungefähr. An Thema als Euthanasie, an ich ging mengen, da lust man auch noch mal hier direkt aufhängen, mit dem ersten Teil davon.
Okay, good morning to all. Thank you very much for attending this online press conference about the launch of a petition to the European Parliament on voluntary assisted dying as a fundamental right, because 28 non-governmental organizations focusing on end-of-life decisions and civil liberties from across Europe have made the move by deciding to join forces in a pan-European effort to reinforce the right to self-determination within the European Union. I will, first of all, read out the proposal. The proposals included in this petition. First, the inclusion of the right to voluntary assisted dying in the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union. Then we ask for an EU legislation to enforce the individual rights to decide by what means and at what point their lives will end, provided this person is capable of freely reaching a decision on this question and acting in consequence, which is considered by the European Court of Human Rights as, and I quote, one of the aspects of the right to respect the private life. In particular, proper professional assistance to end-of-life decisions should be provided in the European Union. And then, the mutual recognition of living will declarations and advanced directives within the European Union for those arrangements compatible with the law of the member states where the person is at the moment of need. And to this end, we ask for a European Union database created in order to facilitate access to national living will depositories when needed, in full compliance with the fundamental right to privacy. And last, the convening of the European Citizen Assembly by petition to discuss and propose possible European measures to approach the issue of the right to die in a dignified way. This is the text of the petition. I'm convinced that the European Union must increasingly become a space of freedom and fundamental rights. And on voluntary assisted dying, each member state, of course, must be able to legislate based on its own legal and administrative tradition, particularly regarding the healthcare system, for example, but always respecting the principles recognized by the European Court of Human Rights, according to which every individual has, as it is quoted in the petition, the right to decide by what means and at what point their lives will end, provided this person is capable of reaching a decision. This is considered by the European Court of Human Rights as one of the aspects of the right to respect of private life. And this is why European organizations dealing with the issue have decided to join forces for a common initiative, addressing the European Parliament to demand that this freedom of choice be recognized in the Fundamental Charter of the Human Rights. And the other point, given that the European Union is also a space of free movement of people, it is crucial that it's also concerning the right to health in end-of-life choices. You remember during the COVID-19 pandemic, it was possible to create a system of mutual recognition of vaccination information in a few weeks. You remember the Green Pass. This means that there are no technical obstacles to the mutual recognition of living will, at least for those conforming to the law of the country where the sick person may find themselves in need of demanding respect for their own will, previously expressed in the country of their citizenship. So today marks the beginning of the signature collection across the European Union. We will ask candidates for the European elections, regardless of their political orientation, to endorse this petition. And I hope that somebody will listen sooner or later in the European Union. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Marco. And we now start our roundtable of endorsement about this petition. So I will start by giving the floor to Heidemarie Hertel from the Austrian Society for a Human End of Life. And Heidemarie, you can tell us more about the legal situation of euthanasia in your country, but also why you are supporting this European petition. Heidi, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Lorenzo, and good morning. As you've heard, I am today representing ÖGHL, the Austrian Society for a Humane End of Life. And this association was founded only 5 years ago. Back then, assistance in voluntary dying was a criminal offense in Austria. We then initiated and filed a constitutional complaint. And as a result, legislation was indeed changed. Since the beginning of 22, so for just over 2 years, voluntary assisted dying is possible in Austria, but within a very narrow legal framework. So although we feel that this is a huge step forward towards self-determination at all stages of life, we feel that more have to follow in Austria and, of course, on an international level. We are a tiny country. We rely on numerous interactions with our neighbors. We enjoy the freedom to travel to and work in and live in any European country. So it does not make sense at all that legislation concerning end-of-life decisions should differ depending on where you are located at the time when you need it. And we therefore feel very strongly about harmonizing regulations across Europe, and we fully support this petition that is being launched. And we do know that our values are shared by a large part of the population and also a number of public figures in Austria, such as the actress and TV presenter Chris Lohner or the author Daniel Visser, and others have spoken out publicly about their belief in self-determination at the end of life. So clearly the time is ripe. Thank you.
Bye.
now the floor to Jacqueline Herremans from the Association pour le droit de mourir dans la dignité from Belgium. Jacqueline, the floor.
Law on patients' right, we have a law on euthanasia. Patient right, well, it's possible for a Belgian citizen or citizen living in Belgium to have the informed consent for every medical treatment, but also to have the possibility to refuse a treatment, and that in advance. So we have living wills in Belgium recognized by the law. And that's very important because, well, the end of the life, that's a very important point. But before the end of life, we have to get this freedom of decide for ourselves about medical treatments and to have this focus about self-determination along on life about medical treatments. About euthanasia, yes, we are lucky to get to have this law and not from, you know, a short time. This law was passed in 2002. So we know a lot about the practice of euthanasia. It is possible in Belgium by lethal injection or by a syrup of barbiturates. So we must say that it's possible in Belgium, euthanasia and assisted suicide, in other words. But, well, that's the point that we have to stress. We received daily requests from citizens, not only from Europe, but on low, but also from the world, from South Korea, for example, from Australia. But, well, I remain in Europe. That's the most important point today. And do you know that last year, more than 100 citizens from France were able to benefit from our law on euthanasia, more than 100. But very often we have to discourage people requesting euthanasia in Belgium because we have to follow the law and it's not so easy, you know, that's a road with several problems on the road. So, for a citizen from abroad, it's not so easy to get euthanasia in Belgium. And so that's the reason we really, support this idea that it would be possible in each country of Europe and thereafter in the world. One important step was the case Mortier against Belgium in front of the Court of Human Rights of Strasbourg. And it was confirmed by the court that our Belgian law on euthanasia was absolutely conforming the requirement of the Convention on Human Rights. That was an important step. That was the first time that the court has to pronounce a decision around a law on euthanasia. And we get it. That was the opponents. They introduced the request in front of the reopened court. Sorry for them. They lose. We are supporting this idea that it would be possible in each country to get the right to decide about the end of our life and also to have the right to decide about medical treatment. So the idea of, for example, a open passport about living wills, that's very interesting. We have now developed ELs in different countries and also in Europe. So that's the the way to get the possibility to have these living wills respect in each country of Europe.
Good times for a change. See, the look I've had can make a good man turn bad. So please, 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 let me get what I want this time. Haven't had a dream in a long time. See, the life I've had can make a good man bad. So for once in my life, let me get what I want. Lord knows it would be the first time. Lord knows it would be the first time.
I will give now the floor to Ireland, and I will ask to Jani Lazar, who's chair of End of Life, chair of End of Life Ireland, and Justin McKenna, partners at Law LLP, and they can both summarize the situation in Ireland and also why they support this petition.
I'd like to start from the absence of legislation. That, if you like, the driving force for us is that we believe that nobody should have to travel for an assisted death. Nobody should have to endure prolonged suffering. The fact that somebody is dying or they have an incurable condition and their quality of life is unacceptable to them and they're on a downward journey, if you like, towards their death, that their own country, they should be able to die in their own country at a time that they deem is right for them. To die alone by alternative means, to have to consider to take their lives by suicide, to have to send off for drugs to do this, to have to curtail their life earlier to travel is unacceptable to us. So we're in the situation at the moment where we have no legislation. And what I will do now is to pass over to Justin to give you an update as to where we're at, one step in the journey.
Thank you all for this opportunity to address this very important petition. The legal position in Ireland is that we're governed by the Suicide Act of 1993, in which it is a criminal offence to aid, abet, procure, or counsel a suicide. And the punishment is 14 years in prison. After the passing of that act in 93, there were a number of cases introducing an element of compassion for those who were at the end of their lives. And it was decided in 2013 that the legislature in Ireland were free to introduce a law. In other words, the Constitution didn't deny them the right to do so. That meant that it was not necessary to go to the people, that the state legislature could introduce the law. Subsequent to that, we had the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, and that prompted passing of the Assisted Decision-Making Capacity Act in 2015. Now, it has taken 8 years for that act to be implemented because of the changes that it brought about in our system here of management of particularly mental health. And these protocols were determined and an Office of Decision Support Service established to enable people to make decisions when they've lost capacity. The point about that is that it also introduced the concept of a living will, the right to make an advanced healthcare decision, the idea that one could, at the end of life, determine what would be the best way to die, but in a restrictive sense. In other words, that it could only determine what should not be done, such as resuscitation or artificial feeding or ventilation. Then in 2020, we had a private member's bill introduced to the Irish Parliament, the Dignity with Dying Bill, and it was debated and decided it should go to committee. The committee that subsequently was put together to debate and discuss this topic sat for 9 months from last year and has delivered its report just last week. And the committee report is 91 pages in length with 38 recommendations. And they have determined that, or they have recommended that the law be changed to enable assisted dying. So there have been wonderful movements forward in preparing Ireland for the next step. And in September of this year, Ireland will be hosting the conference for the Federation of World Right to Die Societies. And that will be happening here in Dublin this coming September. So that brings you up to date with the position as we have it in Ireland. So thank you, Lorenzo.
To Yvette Schwit from the Dutch Right to Die Society from Netherlands.
Thank you, Lorenzo, and good morning, everyone. In headlines, it is kind of the same system as for Belgium. So in the Netherlands, euthanasia by lethal injection or assisted suicide by the drink is possible. So the legal framework is quite similar. Our association, the NVVE, was founded in 1973, and it took us 30 years to advocate for the euthanasia law we have nowadays. And we find it very important that not only in the Netherlands, in Belgium and other European countries, there is a possibility to die with dignity, but we find that it should be able for all European citizens and one day for all citizens worldwide. So we advocate for more self-determination and awareness. And that's why we support this initiative. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Yvette. And now we have the last speech of this conference. Then we will, as I said, open the mic for questions. So I already have in the chat one question. The floor is yours, Claude Durie. We will give you the floor in French.
Aujourd'hui, il y a une avancée importante au niveau de la France. Pour la première fois, on va parler d'aide à mourir. Le président dépose un projet de loi au niveau de l'Assemblée, des assemblées, pour enfin avoir dans la loi le terme aide à mourir. Aujourd'hui, toute aide à mourir est illégale. Nous sommes poursuivis, d'ailleurs, auprès des tribunaux pour avoir informé nos adhérents de la possibilité d'obtenir du nabutal. Ce qui est important, je pense, dans la pétition que, évidemment, nous avons signée, c'est que, enfin, on puisse, au niveau européen, essayer d'avoir une communauté, une possibilité pour les ressortissants d'avoir une loi, peut-être, de choisir la loi qui leur convient si dans leur pays, la loi du pays ne leur convient pas. C'est très difficile à obtenir, je pense. La loi proposée exclut les mineurs, toutes les maladies neurodégénératives, les maladies psychiatriques, les personnes âgées. Que reste-t-il comme malades qui vont pouvoir être aidés éventuellement à mourir? J'ai lu dans la traduction de la pétition le droit des individus de décider par quels moyens et à quel moment leur vie prendra fin. Est-ce qu'il n'y a pas de conditions? Est-ce qu'il faut être malade? Est-ce que c'est volontairement que ça n'a pas été précisé dans la pétition? C'est une réflexion que je fais. Voilà un petit peu, et nous sommes beaucoup écoutés en ce moment dans les médias parce que il y a des cas qui vont en Belgique, des personnes qui vont en Suisse, qui médiatisent leur passage dans les États limitrophes, et puis il y a ce procès qui arrive, peut-être d'ici la fin de l'année. Donc ça nous fait à chaque fois une tribune pour exprimer nos pensées, nos demandes et nos, on va pas dire, revendications.
The sky's as deep as it can be. Bend down the branches. Close your eyes and you will see. Bend down the branches. You're like a willow. Once you and not so steep, bend the branches. Close your eyes and go to sleep. Bend down the branches.
Okay, I will add the formal answer to the Nina Sankari question. The European Union recognize one day or another the voluntary assisted dying as a fundamental human right, this doesn't mean from a formal immediate point of view that it would be easier to obtain in another European country voluntary assisted dying. But the indirect effect could be that if this European legislation will pass one day, then it would influence national legislations, and then it would be probably easier to obtain in another European country voluntary assisted dying. So it's not a direct, it would not be a direct formal consequence, but it could be an indirect consequence because of the influence that European legislation will have on national legislation.
Thank you. Thank you, Marco, for answering. And now I will say this is the last appeal for question, because we are closing the conference. But if there is any last question, I don't see hands from participants.
Okay. So as we said at the beginning, we will send you the link to this conference so that you can use it with your own press contact. We will also send you a press release with the results of the press conference so that you can, if you wish, translate and spread out to your own press contacts. And I would like also to send you in the chat the link of the, because we published the petition on the web, so that if somebody want to sign the petition can do it this link. You are also free to put the petition in your own website of your own organization if you wish, and then we share the results. And I sent you the link to the for the possibility to sign the petition. I encourage you to collect signatures from prominent personalities in your own country, so that maybe in 1 month or before the European election, we can have a public update of the support that we obtained to the petition, so that we can reinforce the pressure to European Parliament and to the European Parliament candidates for next European election. So this will be a type of activity that it's very important to do. So we consider this moment, this press conference, not as the final step of the process, but more as a first step of a process of pressure to the EU institution for the coming weeks and months. So thank you very much for attending, and see you very soon. And there is also this very important appointment in Ireland in September that was mentioned. So we will have other occasion online or in person to join forces to our common goal. Thank you very much.